Liar's Poker. If you've ever wondered what it would be like to step onto a Wall Street trading floor in the 1980s, buckle up, because Liar's Poker doesn't just tell you, it throws you right into the chaos. This isn't the polished, calculated finance of textbooks. It's raw, loud, and ruled by a unique breed of traders, part gamblers, part warriors, and all adrenaline. Deals worth millions are made with a flick of the wrist. Fortunes rise and fall in an instant. And behind it all is a culture that thrives on arrogance, excess, and sheer bravado. Michael Lewis didn't aim to become a Wall Street insider, but through a fortunate twist of timing and luck, he landed at Salomon Brothers, one of the era's most formidable firms. What he found wasn't merely a high-stakes financial powerhouse, but a domain where deception was honed as an art and survival hinged on outplaying everyone else. In Liar's Poker, he draws us behind the scenes, merging sharp wit with personal observation to reveal the absurdity, brilliance, and recklessness that propelled Wall Street's surge. But this book isn't solely about money. It's about power, risk, and the psychology of those who believe they can outsmart the system. It's a tale of ambition and excess, of winners and losers, and of a financial world that, even decades later, still runs on that same high-stakes mindset. The real question lingers. If you were in their position, would you play the game or be outmaneuvered? Chapter 1. Liar's Poker. Picture this. It's 1986, and the Salomon Brothers trading floor in New York is buzzing like an adrenaline-fueled hive. Michael Lewis throws you right into the fray, where billions of dollars teeter on a razor's edge, and the atmosphere crackles with tension. The centerpiece of this chaotic spectacle is John Gutfreund, the ringleader known as the King of Wall Street, who tends to sneak up on traders like a cigar-smoking ghost, scattering ashes and frayed nerves behind him. One day he approaches John Merriweather, a bond-trading genius with a poker card that could freeze molten rock, and issues him a challenge, a round of Liar's Poker, $1 million on the line, no complaining if he loses. It's the kind of scene that quickens your pulse just by reading it. Two giants facing off in a contest that's half deception, half calculation, fought over the serial numbers on dollar bills. Merriweather, unflappable as ever, turns the tables and raises the prize to $10 million, a move so fluid it's practically Hollywood style. Gutfreund hesitates, smiles, and walks away. But the impasse lingers in Salomon's mythology like a persistent stain. Lewis frames this as more than a joke. It's a glimpse into a realm where courage, intellect, and a touch of madness reign supreme. Next, let's step back a little. Lewis isn't merely spinning an entertaining yarn. He's dragging you into the pulsing core of a financial frontier. He's a bond salesman stationed amid the turmoil, observing unseasoned 20-somethings like himself haul in money quicker than they can tally it. The trading floor is a frenzy of yelling, perspiring traders, and Gutfreund's the maestro who thrives on keeping everyone off balance. Liar's Poker, with its wagers and dares, isn't just a diversion. It's a proving ground for the bond trade, where you must decode your rival's flinch while juggling figures mentally. Merriweather's squad, a gang of eggheads with PhDs, approach it like a hallowed ritual, whereas Gutfreund's million-dollar taunt is his awkward bid to show he's still part of the crew. When Merriweather responds, it's not just a power move. It's a lesson in outwitting the chief without batting an eye. Lewis reels you in with this saga, letting you taste the thrill of a world where cash surges like a torrent and egos clash like lightning, priming you for a wild ride through Wall Street's heyday. Chapter 2, Never Mention Money. Have you ever experienced a time when luck simply dropped a winning lottery ticket into your hands? That's Michael Lewis in London, 1984, sipping tea and pursuing a master's degree when destiny gate crashes a royal fundraiser at St. James's Palace. He's anticipating an elegant supper with the Queen Mother. Yet instead, it's a crowd of insurance salesmen and a pair of Salomon Brothers wives who flip his evening on its head. One of them led to a high-flying managing director taking a liking to him, quizzing him about his ambitions like a meddling ant on a quest. Lewis, just 24, stumbles through his rosy vision of banking grand offices, posh meals. However, she's not buying it. She's hooked on the trading floor's gritty, breathless grind, and as she hollers, "Hey, Queen, nice dogs you have there!" At the Queen Mother's corgi procession, Lewis is enchanted. This bold Salomon vibe snags him a job without the typical agony of interviews 6,000 others vied that year. Yet he's in, courtesy of her push and an oddly laid-back breakfast with recruiter Leo Corbett, where he essentially recruits himself. It's a lucky break that leaves you grinning at his serendipity. Now, step back a moment, and Lewis reveals the other side. His earlier Wall Street aspirations flattened like a tin can. Back at Princeton in 81, he's an art history student amid a flood of econ majors, flubbing a Lehman Brothers interview so spectacularly it's nearly comical. Asked why he wants the gig, he blurts, "To make money," and the air turns icy. Apparently, you're expected to rave about the challenge, or the people, not the dough. It's a harsh crash course in the game's hidden codes, and he flames out, spurned by every bank while his classmates nab analyst roles that sound like spirit-draining, document-sorting slogs. Leap ahead to London, and that St. James's evening feels like a storybook turn. He's sidestepped the grind, yet he's still nursing a grudge about slipping in through the side entrance. Lewis weaves this tale with a smirk, blending self-mockery with awestruck curiosity at how Wall Street is fixated on wealth but loathes owning up to it. It's a tantalizing opener, drawing you into his odyssey from outsider to insider with a narrative that's as much laugh-out-loud funny as it is touching. Chapter 3. Learning to Love Your Corporate Culture. Slip into Lewis's shoes on his first day at Salomon Brothers in 85, and you're slammed with a rush of adrenaline and grit. He's wandering Wall Street at Sunrise River to one side, Graveyard to the other, observing suits scurry like ants, their expressions carved with anxiety, while he's humming like a child on Christmas morning. How come? A tidy 42 grand a year, plus a bonus, a salary that leaves his London prof sputtering over his tea. The trading floor's a monster noisy, chaotic, and dominated by Gutfreund's cigar-littered desk, where traders swear and scramble beneath signs like, "Eat stress for breakfast." Lewis encounters his rabbi, a mentor in this wilderness, and Dash Riprock, a salesman dripping with charisma, both icons in a realm where profit reigns supreme. Salomon's the alpha, hauling in more cash than anyone, all due to bonds of market they control because they're gritty, not polished. Lewis plunges into this mayhem, half scared, half exhilarated, absorbing a culture that's as electrifying as it is unhinged. Here's the twist. These folks aren't the polished masterminds you'd imagine. Many never stepped foot in a college lecture hall. Still, they've forged a cash engine by pinching pennies on trades like turning IBM bonds for a fast 60 grand. Lewis shatters the notion that it's all grand gambles. It's more akin to a toll gate, profiting off every transaction. Gutfreund's sale of the firm to Phibro in 81 for $554 million bagging 40 mil for himself still rankles veterans like William Salomon, who viewed the partnership as kin. That disloyalty lingers in the atmosphere. Yet Lewis can't resist adoring the unfiltered energy, the shouting, the power moves, the sheer nerve. His training group gets a speech about merit. However, the arbitrary job placements reveal a starker reality. This joint thrives on the gut, not justice. You're gripped by his starry-eyed perspective, sensing the heartbeat of a firm that's a sweaty, profanity-laced tangle of genius and avarice, a tribute to a culture he's already smitten with despite its flaws. Chapter 4, Adult Education. Brace yourself for Lewis's whirlwind ride through Salomon's training program. It's less a lecture hall and more a brawl pit for 120-plus rookies, mostly fresh off Ivy League triumphs. The atmosphere's charged. Picture seasoned traders snarling bond math and market tactics that stunned newbies, morphing textbook savvy into street savvy in a flash. Lewis, just out of academia, grapples with yield curves and arbitrage, concepts that seem dull on the page, yet spark to life when they're your key to millions. Gutfreund storms in one day, all bravado and cigar. Weaving tales of trading victories that electrify the space, he's the icon they all aspire to emulate. However, murmurs of layoffs and the firm's wobbly post-fibro stance slip through, casting this boot camp as a high-stakes bet. Lewis pulls you into the slog late nights, grueling exercises, and the creeping realization that this isn't about education. It's about enduring a gauntlet built to churn out Salomon warriors. Next, he's shipped to London, flung into the sales fray under Alexander, a razor-witted veteran who schools him in jamming bonds pushing dubious securities onto clients with a grin. It's a jolt to his ethics, yet he's too entrenched to retreat, hawking deals like Olympia and York bonds, he doubts. The trainees cling together over pints and bleary-eyed cram sessions, a tether in this predator-infested pool. Though the endgame disappoints, job assignments seem like a dice roll, not a prize. Lewis winds up in London partly by fluke, and you sense his blend of wonder and disquiet as he shifts from a wide-eyed newbie to a smooth-talking gear in the system. It's a rite of passage story with bite, oozing with the rush of the grind and the bite of concession, holding you rapt as he evolves in a realm that's as alluring as it is merciless. Chapter 5, A Brotherhood of Hoods. Step into Lewis's London squad, a motley pack of sales hoods who'd sooner slash throats than drop a deal. These characters are a blast. Alexander's biting sarcasm slices like a knife. Dash Riprock's pure flair sidesteps failures, and they're closer than a locked safe, at least when the money's flowing. They're Salomon's oddballs, dialing up Europe's elite, weaving tales to offload bonds like ticking time bombs. Lewis gets dragged into pitching Olympia in York, a gig he's uneasy about. Yet the crew's energy, raw humor, communal brews, and a defiant salute to New York's brass grabs him tight. They're a fraternity tempered by targets and payouts, chasing the next win, and you can't resist smirking at their chaos, even as the pressure spikes with jobs like the British Petroleum underwriting. However, there's a grim twist to this bunch. Jamming bonds-loading clients with trash they don't want is their lifeblood, and Alexander brushes it off with a caveat emptor grin that leaves Lewis uneasy. The floor's hierarchy kneels to the big swinging dicks, Gutfreund and Merriweather figures who run the show, and these hoods flourish in their orbit, skirting the firm's larger tempests like the Pearlman Panic. Loyalty's a slippery concept here. It's solid until it fades, linked more to the bottom line than the soul. Lewis sweeps you into their world with stories of swagger and betrayal, making you cheer for this feisty lot while wincing at the dodgy tactics that keep them buoyant. It's a wild jaunt through a subculture that's as exhilarating as it is unsettling. A gang of scoundrels you'll adore despising. Chapter 6, The Fat Men and Their Marvelous Money Machine. Get acquainted with the Fat Men, Salomon's elite on the 41st floor, massive traders like Louis Ranieri, who've morphed bond trading into a cash-gushing juggernaut. Lewis ushers you into their domain, where size mirrors tenacity, and the firm's vintage edge-raking and profits like gatekeepers propelled it to Wall Street dominance. Envision a trader turning IBM bonds for 60 grand in a flash, not through bold risks, but by outsmarting naive clients. Gutfreund's desk reigns supreme, yet it's wobbling. His fibro sellout in 81, pocketing $40 million, still rankles veterans who saw the firm as family. Merriweather's cerebral arbitrage team is the fresh wave, treating bonds like a strategy game while the fat men grip their fading heyday. Lewis captivates you with their outsized bravado, a posse that crafted a profit engine so seamless it's nearly enchanted until it begins to falter. The fishers emerge when Salomon dives into junk bonds, tardy to the scene with deals like Southland that Lewis pegs as trouble from afar. These giants, once invincible, misjudge the leap to takeovers and equities, shedding stars like Ranieri and misstepping as competitors like Drexel seize the stage. The engine's still pumping billions, though it's shaky Gutfreund's cigar wisps, and the trader's profanity can't mask the decay. Lewis crafts this as an epic of might and hubris, a band of titans too rigid to adapt as the rules shift. You're drawn in by the sheer magnitude of their domain and the gradual unraveling of their rule. A story of genius unraveled by oversights that'll keep you flipping pages to witness the collapse. Chapter 7, The Salomon Diet. Step into the slick, untamed realm of the Salomon Brothers in Chapter 7, where Michael Lewis hands you a prime view of a banquet that's as disorderly as it is enthralling. The Salomon Diet isn't any posh detox. It's a relentless barrage of burgers, fries, and tension that drives the trading floor like jet fuel. Lewis arrives in London and his days morph into a sprint of yelling into phones, gobbling takeout, and wrestling millions in bonds, all while time keeps racing forward. The floor's a drenched spectacle. Traders like Alexander are munching sandwiches mid-transaction, Dash Riprock's flinging burger wrappers like streamers, and Gutfreund's cigar haze looms thick above it all. Rookies like Lewis catch on quickly. You scarf food on the move, or you go hungry since the deals never pause. It's an uproarious yarn, brimming with the sort of raw specifics that let you feel the grease on your hands and the thrill in your veins, drawing you into a domain where overindulgence reigns supreme. Yet this isn't solely about grub. It's a mark of endurance, a battle shout in a jungle that devours the frail and discards them. Lewis portrays these traders as fighters, their ballooning waistlines proof they're rugged enough to prosper amid the frenzy. He's in the thick of it, wolfing down meals while sidestepping New York's snapped commands, his tie spotted and his nerves shot. The diet's a bulwark against the insanity. Each chomp powers the next sale, and each belches defiance to the execs, who assume they call the shots. You can practically hear the takeout bags crinkling and the traders swearing as Lewis weaves this tale, sparking laughs at the ridiculousness while cheering for these rough-and-tumble gorgers. It's a raucous, sloppy journey through a culture that's as unrefined as it is relentless, leaving you craving more of this monetary, munching madness. Chapter 8, From Geek to Man. Prepare for a raucous transformation in Chapter 8, where Lewis guides you through his journey of ditching his geeky exterior to stride into the shoes of a Salomon powerhouse. It's a metamorphosis that'll keep you riveted to the story. He begins as a starry-eyed novice just out of training, quaking on the London floor like a beginner at auditions. Along comes Alexander, a razor-sharp pro who hurls him into the fray, showing him how to jam bonds, charming clients into snapping up deals Lewis isn't fully sold on. His defining moment? Offloading $86 million Olympia New York bonds to a Frenchman who doesn't flinch. A rush that strikes like a gulp of bourbon, yet lingers with a bitter edge. The floor's a festival of bravado traders, swaggers if they rule the globe. Gutfreund's cigar glows like a signal, and Lewis masters the art of bluffing alongside the pros. It's a rugged, pulse-pounding saga of a man carving his place in a wilderness where the timid get trampled. This isn't merely a gig, it's a reinvention, and Lewis drags you straight into the grit and gusto of it. He's dealing late into the night, his throat raw from spieling, his morals prodding as he pushes more bonds. Dash Riprock's smooth evasions and the gang's coarse wisecracks enfold him in a rugged camaraderie, while New York's presence cue Fibro's aftermath casts a long shadow. He's no longer the scholarly idealist. He's a contender, addicted to the adrenaline even as he grapples with the grime on his hands. Lewis narrates it with a sharp bite, blending triumph with a hint of remorse, letting you ride every peak and dip as he hardens. It's a narrative that's as electrifying as it is unsettling, a whirlwind of a man maturing in a realm indifferent to his past self, and you'll be eager to discover where it leads him next. Chapter 9, The Art of War. Strap in for Chapter 9, where Lewis transforms the trading floor into a combat zone and crafts a narrative so enthralling you'll sense the bullets zipping past. This isn't mere commerce, it's warfare, and Salomon's team are the gritty troopers slugging it out for every buck. Lewis is in London, brandishing phones like explosives, hurling bond pitches at cautious clients, while Gutfreund directs from New York like a cigar-puffing commander. Meriwether's arbitrage unit are the snipers, nailing profits with pinpoint accuracy, and Lewis is evading shrapnel, shoving junk bonds like Southland that he'd sooner burn than peddle. Alexander's his trenchmate, guiding him to plaster on a grin through the cell while Dash sidesteps the action like a seasoned vet. It's a turbocharged clash, thrumming with the din of conflict each calls a clash. Each deal a triumph, and Lewis reels you in with the raw ferocity of it all. The risks are towering, and allegiance is a phantom in this bunker. Lewis maps out the playbook out with the client, out-endure the foe, and hope the firm doesn't trip over itself, like with the Pearlman takeover panic-shaking the troops. He's mired in the muck, flogging dicey deals his instincts recoil from, while the big swinging dicks swagger above the chaos. Their sway the sole rule. The floor's a combat arena, traders shout. Sweat pours, and the atmosphere's dense with strain as they forge order into profit with a savage finesse that's utterly spellbinding. Lewis recounts it like a grizzled soldier trading tales by the flames, dragging you into the fray with every vivid stroke. It's a pulse-racing war epic where the prizes are millions, and the losses are souls, leaving you eager to spot who's left upright when the dust settles. Chapter 10, How Can We Make You Happier? Visualize this in Chapter 10. Salomon's a vessel springing leaks, and Lewis hands you a prime view of the crew's frantic dash to patch the holes with money and forced grins. The firm's a shambles. Gutfreund's fibro stab still reeks. Ranieri's out, and layoffs hover like thunderheads. So the top dogs throw a desperate pass. How can we cheer you up? It's a comical lifeline. Less about cozy vibes and more about securing allegiance with hefty bonuses. Lewis is in London, cashing in yet antsy, zipping to New York to curry favor and snag his share. The floor's a boiling pot trader's hum with dread, guessing who's next to face the chop, while the execs wave incentives to stop the big swinging dicks from jumping ship. It's a grimly funny fiasco, and Lewis draws you in with a narrator's smirk, sparking laughs at the panic oozing from every pinstripe. Beneath it all, it's a whirlwind of disorder and dough, and Lewis catches every nuance. Meriwether's bond gurus shore up the sinking hull, yet Gutfreund's flailing, his hold weakening as Perlman's takeover threat rocks the planks. Lewis is swept in the chaos tied to his team, yet scanning for exits, while his London pals divide into bonus hounds and breakout seekers. The happiness spiel is a farce, a glossy veneer on a firm splitting apart, and Lewis serves it up with a blend of spunk and doubt that's sheer brilliance. You're alongside him, tasting the strain, snickering at the execs stumbling over their own feet and pondering how long this creaky rig can stay afloat. It's a raucous, rich saga of a giant on the brink, and you'll be gripped, eager for the next installment of this monetary meltdown. Chapter 11, When Bad Things Happen to Rich People. Brace yourself for Chapter 11, where Lewis plunges you into a week so unhinged, it's like Wall Street's own blockbuster catastrophe, and the wealthy are the ones wailing. It starts with a shocker. A board tip to the New York Times reveals 1,000 jobs are kaput, and Salomon's universe turns topsy-turvy. Lewis is in London, witnessing the wreckage spread 500x'd in New York, the Southland junk bond fiasco collapses, and the 87 crash barrels in, slashing their British Petroleum holding by $100 million. Gutfreund's reveling in it, zipping across the floor like a kid at a toy shop, while Lewis sticks close to his desk, sidestepping calls from furious clients. A storm knocks out London, 170 more get pink slips, and the stock market's nosedive lands a body blow to the bigwigs. Lewis weaves it with a narrator's zest, gripping you with a story of riches vanishing quicker than steam off a griddle. The fallout's a crazy stew of gloom and grit, and Lewis plants you smack in the middle. He scoops up bargain Salomon stock, wagering on a rebound, while bond traders celebrate as their turf surges and equities hemorrhage. The training crew scrambles for back office crumbs, women bear the brunt, and Gutfreund pins it on the leak. Lewis half believes he's the mastermind, a cunning ploy to fast-track the purge. Junk bonds tank, BP's a flop, and bonuses inexplicably soar. Lewis pockets $225 grand in a twist that's sheer lunacy. It's a whirlwind of avarice, nerve, and dark chuckles, dragging you through a week where the powerful falter and the tenacious scrape through. Lewis dishes it out like a tavern tale, unpolished and spellbinding, letting you taste the turmoil and yearn for the aftermath of this tycoon's terror. You won't skip a syllable. Closing thoughts. Liar's Poker isn't just a story about Wall Street. It's an inside look at the high-stakes world of finance, where ambition, luck, and boldness determine who rises and who falls. Michael Lewis captures the raw energy of an era when traders gambled millions as if they were playing a game, revealing how power and wealth were often built on arrogance and excess. Through humor and the sharp storytelling, he shows that financial success isn't always about intelligence or hard work, but about knowing how to play the game better than everyone else. Beyond finance, the book serves as a reminder that the systems we trust are often driven by human flaws, making them far less rational than they seem. It challenges readers to question what they see as skill versus sheer luck, and highlights the fine line between confidence and recklessness. Whether you're fascinated by Wall Street or simply interested in understanding how risk and reward shape industries, Liar's Poker offers an entertaining yet eye-opening perspective on a world where fortunes are made and lost in the blink of an eye.